Welcome to Knowing Christ, the broadcast ministry of Dr. Rich Burkle. We're glad you're listening and encourage you to tune in each week as we study God's Word. Our desire is that each week we will know Christ more and more.
Everyone has some skeleton in their closet. Surely someone can tell a story that would ruin Daniel's career. Great idea. Let's hire some researchers who will interview anyone and everyone who's had anything to do with Daniel. We're going to find dirt on this man. Despite hours of interviews from hundreds of people, not one makes a credible complaint against Daniel.
Listen as Rich introduces today's message.
Welcome to Knowing Christ. Today we open up our Bibles to Daniel 6, and of all the chapters in Daniel, this is the most famous chapter of all. Of course, it's the story of Daniel and the lion's den. And reminded how Daniel, over the course of his life, has been faithful, and now in his older years, he remains faithful underneath extreme pressure. You know, in our life, we can't expect that the pressure of temptation will somehow wane as we grow older or more mature in the Lord. In fact, oftentimes that temptation grows even stronger. And Daniel really teaches us that our worship of the one true and living God is worth everything. It's worth every cost because it's our worship that is the thing that connects us to eternity and lasts forever and connects us to true enjoyment in life. And so we have so much to learn from Daniel in this event in his life, and so much to learn about the Lord and his faithfulness to us. Let's open up our Bibles to Daniel 6 together as we grow in faith together.
So Daniel, he is over 80 years old when King Belshazzar is killed and King Darius the Mede begins to rule. Daniel has served the Babylonian kings for the past 66 years of his life. He was deported as a teenager from his home in Judah into Babylon. And for 66 years, God has favored him with a position of responsibility and authority. Nebuchadnezzar specifically favored and loved Daniel. When Nebuchadnezzar dies, Daniel seems to be treated well over the last couple decades as other leaders in Babylon rise to the front. He seems to be pushed off to the side, but he doesn't seem to be persecuted. And now that Darius receives the kingdom from the Lord, Daniel knows that his life is going to change. And really, it could change almost in any direction. New regime is going to mean new leadership, and new leadership is going to be new practices. And Daniel's a praying man, and I imagine Daniel getting on his knees during one of his three prayer sessions in the day, saying, "Lord, I'm your servant. I will be faithful to you under the Medes and the Persians as I was faithful to you under the Babylonians. Lord, I don't know whether you'll have me to suffer or whether you'll grant me good favor in this realm. But Lord, whether it's to suffer or to live a life of blessing, I want to live it for you. I want to worship you. Grant me strength." Daniel soon finds out what the Lord ordains for him. King Darius needs good people whom he can trust to administer his new government and this new empire. And every nobleman in Babylon is vying for one of the 120 new leadership positions that Darius creates. And one by one, the 120 men are named to these leadership positions. And Daniel's not among them. And then Darius declares that he's going to appoint three that are going to be over the 120, and he names the first two. And again, Daniel's name is not mentioned. And long at last, Daniel's name is announced as the one who'd be the third of the big three leaders in the Medo-Persian Empire. Darius, in fact, is so impressed so quickly with Daniel, impressed with Daniel's wisdom and faithfulness and loyalty and honesty, that he now plans to place Daniel over the other two and over the 120. And when the other leaders hear this, they begin to fume with jealousy. Daniel is not even from the area. He's from Judah, of all places, this nondescript, nothing kind of nation. He's a Hebrew who always keeps to himself. He doesn't participate in the worship of the Babylonian gods. He has his own one god that he is loyal to. He only eats specific food, so they really don't ever have lunch with him or dinner with him. He seems to be non-social. He refuses to come to the parties that they throw, and he behaves in, quite frankly, weird ways in their view. The other two top administrators and high-ranking officials then are so jealous that they convene a council. They meet together. And the purpose of the meeting was to discover some way to have Daniel removed. I'm going to call this group the Get Daniel Group from here on out. That's what they are. Their whole purpose of meeting together is to get Daniel. And during the first meeting of the Get Daniel Group, one suggests, you know, Daniel has served for 66 years. And he's been around lots and lots of money, lots of financial transactions have passed through his hands. Surely we can look through the ledgers and find some place where he cheated or lied or stole to benefit himself. And another chirps up, yeah, that's a great idea. Everyone cheats at some point. And Daniel's had such a long life with so much money flowing through his desk. No one can be in that high position for that long of a time and be completely clean. And so they hire the best accountants to look through the copious records, searching for something, anything to bring some charge against this man. But after a comprehensive search, nothing. Not even a dust ball of wrongdoing is discovered. Well, the Get Daniel group reconvenes, and one chimes, oh, you know, Daniel has worked with many people. He has had assistants and secretaries and managers who worked with him and under him for so many years. Many have watched his life, his work so very closely. Everyone has some skeleton in their closet. Surely someone can tell a story that would ruin Daniel's career. Great idea. Let's hire some researchers who will interview anyone and everyone who's had anything to do with Daniel. We're going to find dirt on this man. Despite hours of interviews from hundreds of people, not one person, not one makes a credible complaint against Daniel. Well, the Get Daniel group again meets, and this time one says, guys, you know, it's now clear to us that we're not going to find any act or any relationship to criticize or condemn Daniel in the way he does his business. There's really only one way I can think of to get him. We all know that Daniel's first allegiance is to his God. And if we can find some way that our laws contradict the laws of his God, then we can make a case. Because we know that if Daniel has to choose between the laws of the king and the laws of his God, he's going to obey the laws of his God every single time. And another guy said, this is a great idea, and let's make sure we ask for a penalty to be applied to a new law that we would make. And you know, Darius, he wants to be honored in his new kingdom. And so let's make a law where no one can pray to anyone except to Darius for the next 30 days. And let's go to him saying that our whole purpose is that Darius would be honored in his kingdom and Darius would be looked to as the one who is so mighty and great and the bestower of all good things. And we know that if Daniel has to choose between praying to his God and not praying to his God, he is going to pray. He's going to pray. And so that's right, he will. And I have a better idea yet. Let's make sure that the penalty is something so frightening that we will all just rejoice in seeing the worst thing we could possibly imagine happen to Daniel. Let's ask the king to put this new law into place under penalty. The person who disobeys it would be thrown into the lion's den. They all shout, hear, 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 this is going to work. And they leave all excited. One of the members writes the proposal on legal paper. And the next morning, the Get Daniel group marches down to the palace to see King Darius. And when they arrive, they all bow to him. Oh, long live King Darius. We love you. You're such an awesome king. And they say, King Darius, we want you to be given the respect and the esteem that you deserve in this new part of your kingdom. And we've all agreed upon a way that you can receive that kind of honor. We've agreed upon the goodness of a new law that we believe will help the people to lift you up and to respect you. King Darius says, well, I kind of like that idea. What is the new law all about? What do you propose? Well, here's a draft. We've drafted a copy, and here's what we've agreed to. That no one can pray to any other god or any other person other than you for the next 30 days. And that if they disobey, that they'll be thrown to the lion's den. We've actually already drafted up the copy. Here it is. Once you sign it, the law is going to take place today, so we can get this going, get your honor rolling as we want it to. And as you know, once you sign the law, it won't be able to be changed, revoked, so it's going to be set in motion, and you'll finally get the honor that is due you. King Darius is overjoyed. His pride has been fed, and he really is flattered that these high officials would take such a care for him and care so much about his esteem. Well, with joy, he takes up his quill, and a happy flourish, he signs the new law into effect right there. Well, the Get Daniel group, they leave the palace that day so happy, but with such dark hearts. One says, "We all know that Daniel has a habit of opening his windows to pray to his God three times every day. Let's make sure we announce this law so that everyone's going to be accountable to it. And then all we have to do is simply go to Daniel's house and watch. It's going to be so easy to trap him." Daniel is at his official desk in the palace when the law hits his desk and he reads it. And he reads it, his heart sinks to his feet. He knows what this means for him. He also knows what it means to be devoured by lions. He has witnessed this kind of execution, and always with a shudder. He bows his head right there and he says, "Lord, you are my sun and my shield. You are my protector. You are the one who bestows favor and honor. No good thing do you withhold from those who walk uprightly. Oh Lord, give me strength to be faithful to you. Whether by death or by life, I want to worship you." You know, Daniel, he doesn't need to pray to the Lord for direction. He knows what the Lord would have him do. He knows that he must disobey human law in order to obey the Lord in praying to him. And he immediately then gathers up some papers from his desk and he walks to his house at noon, like he has done every day for 66 years. He's made a habit. He gets to his house and he climbs the stairs into an upper room. He opens up the window and he feels the cool breeze blow in across his face. He listens as he hears people down in the street below his house walking and talking. And Daniel asks God for help. "Lord, help me. This trial is too great for me. I need your strength." It reminds me of what Dwight L. Moody once said about the Lord and leaning on him. He says, "Real true faith is man's weakness leaning on God's strength." Daniel is not strong in himself, not even after 80 years of walking with the Lord. He knows that his strength is not found inside of him. His strength is found above him, the Lord. And when Daniel prays, he positions his face westward toward Jerusalem. Though he has not seen the Lord's sacred city for 66 years, the city remains in his heart. He knows the city has been demolished by the Babylonians, and the temple that he loved had also been destroyed. And yet he knows that God has prophesied a future day for his beloved city, Jerusalem, when the Lord himself will come to her, and after 70 years of captivity, revive her. And on that future day, Jerusalem's righteousness will shine like the dawn of the new day, and that Jerusalem's salvation will blaze like a fiery, flaming torch. Daniel believes what Jeremiah has written. He has Jeremiah's prophecies. And he's read in Jeremiah 33, "Behold, the days are coming, declares the Lord, when I will fulfill the promise I made to the house of Israel and the house of Judah. And in those days and at that time, I will cause the righteous branch to spring up from David." There's going to be a Messiah who would come. "And this Messiah will execute justice and righteousness in the land. And in those days, Judah will be saved. A people that had disobeyed the Lord and chased after false idol, they'll be saved, and Jerusalem will dwell securely. The foreign nations won't have her, but she'll be secure in God's people's possession. And this is the name by which it will be called, the Lord is our righteousness." And it's in view of those promises and the hope of that future day, the salvation of Judah and the exaltation of this holy city, Jerusalem, that Daniel opens up the window and he prays toward Jerusalem in fulfillment of the promise that is to come. And with gentleness, I observe that Bible prophecy regarding Jerusalem is not a small, superficial matter to Daniel. It changes even the way he prays three times a day. Well, the Get Daniel group easily sees Daniel opening his window, facing Jerusalem, praying to the Lord who covenanted with Israel, and they run to King Darius. King, did you not sign into law that no one in your kingdom is to bow down and pray to anyone but you for the next 30 days, except you, the one who's majestic? And did you not decree by law that anyone who disobeyed your royal decree would be thrown into the lion's den? The king is a bit perplexed. They seem all excited and so vexed and stirred up, breathless in their communication to him. Well, yes, I did sign such a thing into law, he declares. My decision stands, and you know that not even if I wanted to revoke it, could I. The law of the Medes and the Persians are going to stand regardless. Well, the Get Daniel group acts so sorrowful while they're inwardly dancing with glee. Well, king, there's someone in your realm who has disobeyed and broken your law. Who would that man be? His name is Daniel. And when they tell King Darius that's Daniel, the king's heart just sinks. I've grown to love that guy. He's the one guy around me, Darius thinks, who actually cares about me and actually cares for the good of my administration. And by the end of the day, King Darius, though he searches and searches in his heart for some way to relieve Daniel from this execution of this judgment, he can't find a single way to free him. And at the end of the day, the Get Daniel groups come back to the palace, and they say, Your Majesty, you know that according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, that this law cannot be changed. And Darius now is disgusted. Yes, I know that. I know that. He sets them. He says, Get out of my sight. And at last, Darius gives the orders to his soldiers. You need to go and arrest Daniel, and you are to throw him into the lion's den. Warren Wiersbe describes the lion's den this way. The lion's den was a large pit divided by a movable wall that could be pulled up to allow the lions to go from one side to the other. The keeper would put food in the empty side and lift up the wall so the lions would cross over and eat. He would quickly lower the wall and then clean the safe side of the pit. And the animals, they weren't fed very often or fed great amounts of food so that their appetites would be keen when there was an execution to be made. So the soldiers take Daniel to the lion's den late in the night. And when they arrive at the lion's den, they're absolutely shocked because there standing by the lion's den is none other than King Darius. And he wants to talk to his beloved advisor, Daniel. He comes close to Daniel and he whispers, Daniel, you know if there's any possible way. Well, Daniel smiles as if to assure the king that he understands why Darius must have him thrown into the lion's pit. With a tear streaming down his face, Darius says, May your God, whom you serve so faithfully, rescue you. Darius watches as the soldiers lower Daniel down into the dark den below. A huge stone is rolled over the mouth of the den. And the king seals the stone with his own royal seal so that everyone knows that they must not, on penalty of execution, break the seal. Daniel hears the lions move about in the dark as he is being lowered down. And as his feet hit the floor, he suddenly sees a light that flashes and shines in the darkness. He looks over toward the light and there's this huge figure. It's an angel, so powerful, so mighty, so beautiful. Daniel's reminded of the story of his three friends told him long ago when they were thrown into a fiery furnace where there was a fourth that looked like the Son of God walking among them. And whether this is the same person, either an angel or God himself, we do not know. But this angel speaks to the lions. And with a word, these hungry, growling lions rest in calm repose. Though Daniel can hear the lions' stomachs churn with hunger, the lions, they're as docile as kittens. The night is late and Daniel's tired. And he finds some lump of dirt which to lay his head, and when he finds it, he drifts off into the most deep and peaceful, restorative, refreshing sleep. How the Lord loves to calm the fears of his people and to give sleep even in the face of the most dire trials. While Daniel sleeps in the lion's den, the king is pacing all through the night in his palace. The king doesn't sleep or eat or have any of his usual entertainment that helps him relax at the end of a day. He's miserable. He's just worrying with his hands just folded over and over, wondering what's happening to Daniel. Is Daniel going to be eaten by lions? And all through the night, he's vexed. And before even the morning sun dawns, he runs out in such an undignified manner to the lion's den. And he orders that the mouth of the lion's den, the stone, be rolled away. He's miserable thinking about Daniel being devoured by the lions. And in great anguish, he calls out into the empty pit. He's silent. There's no sound as he hears coming from the lion's den. And he says, Daniel, servant of the living God, was your God whom you served so faithfully, was he able to rescue you from the lions? And there's silence. And then he hears something stir, as if a person getting up from sleep. And then he hears a croaking kind of voice, that first morning voice, shout up to him, long live the king! My God sent his angels to shut the lion's mouth so that they would not hurt me, for I have been found innocent in his sight, and I've not wronged you, O your majesty. Daniel's alive, and the king literally begins to jump up and down with joy. He orders to be immediately lifted out of the den. He embraces Daniel. He looks him over, and he discovers that not even a scratch from a lion's paw is upon him. He has seen many thrown to the lions, and everyone has been devoured with crushing force. This is a miracle. He knows that Daniel's God is the one true and living God who protected Daniel all through the night. And now the king turns his thoughts to the Get Daniel gang. He becomes enraged that they would use him in such a way. He orders that all of them be arrested along with their wives and their children. And then they're thrown into the lion's den. And the Lord unlooses the mouths of the lions when they're thrown in. And the lions leap upon every soul even before they hit the floor of the den. King Darius sends a message to every part of the known world, the people of every ethnicity and nation and language. And he says, peace and prosperity be to you all. I decree that everyone throughout my kingdom should tremble with fear before the God of Daniel, for he is the living God, and he will endure forever. His kingdom will never be destroyed, and his rule will never come to an end. He rescues and he saves his people. He performs miraculous signs and wonders in the heavens and on earth. He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions. And so Daniel prospers all the reign of King Darius the Mede. What a story. No wonder why it is so beloved by children and adults alike.
Rich will have some closing thoughts about today's message in a moment. Would you tell others about Knowing Christ Radio? We love to have new listeners join us as we try to know Christ more and more each week. Here's Rich.
Well, thank you for joining us at Knowing Christ. We pray that this message from Daniel 6 about Daniel facing down lions in order to worship the Lord is an inspiration to your worship. There's nothing more central to our walk with God than our worship of God. The ultimate end of all of our life is in our salvation is worship. That's what we're going to be participating in forever and ever, is what's so vital to our life today that regardless of whatever else happens, that we would worship the Lord. Well, I want to encourage you today in your worship of the Lord by offering a free resource from A.W. Tozier entitled Worship the Missing Jewel. If you can go online, you can get this free of charge, or you can connect with us and write us, and we'll send you a copy of it. But this has been a little sermon that A.W. Tozier preached long ago that really has stirred my heart every time I read it. And if you like it, please feel free to contact us. You can go out on your own on the web and find it. But we pray that God would grow you more and more in your worship of our true and living God.
If you'd like to listen to this message again or download a copy, go to knowingchrist.org. If you've been blessed by this ministry, would you consider supporting us financially? All of the resources offered are sent with no cost to our listeners, so please help us continue to do that by giving a gift today. It's very easy. Just go to knowingchrist.org and select the Support tab. That's knowingchrist.org. And thank you for your partnership. Knowing Christ is the broadcast ministry of Dr. Rich Burkle and Bethany Baptist Church.